Good evening, people, and welcome to another edition of Crowcast Weekend Wrap. This week, unfortunate circumstances, of course, but we'll push on and we'll analyse the game. Joining me tonight, we have Nikki New. How are you going, Nikki?
Not too bad, considering how Friday night started.
Yeah, it's probably good it wasn't a Sunday game or even a Saturday night game, because it took me about a day and a half to calm down.
Yeah, I only got to watch the last quarter because I was playing my own game of football. I did hear the third quarter, so it was very interesting to hear the Triple M call from Melbourne. So it's Brayshaw, Dunstall, etc. So they had some interesting insights.
Now, I must warn listeners now what we're going to do. look, and, you know, right up front, we were on the rough end of the stick in terms of the umpiring, but it wasn't the sole reason why we lost. But the umpiring was sufficiently bad to draw a comment. So if you have little ones listening in at the moment, or you're driving to work and it's Monday Tuesday morning or something or other, I'll give you a moment, a bit of think music, and then we're going to be spending about 5 minutes talking about the umpire. So close your ears for a second, little ones. A little bit of think music there. They're just leaving the room, Nikki. All right. So here we go. Fucking umpiring. I could not fucking believe it. I swear to God, Nikki, that was the worst piece of umpiring, the worst game of umpiring I have ever seen. I know you only saw the last 5 minutes, the last quarter, but oh, Jesus Christ, I swear to God. I'm going to go through every freaking free, all right? Because I went through it and
go no ahead.
If anyone's got the opportunity to watch the smart replay on afl.com.au, flick it to the setting that gives you the freeze. Here we go. The first free kick was comparable to the last free kick that wasn't paid on Isaac Smith. It was holding the ball against the seed. Puopolo gold from that. It was pretty much exactly the same. The second free, Gibson in the back. He was actually pushed in the side. The third free to Hill in the back. My comment here is, what the fuck? My fourth free.
Succinct.
Yeah, well, you know, it's to the point. The Walker slap, which looked worse on the slow-mo than it actually did in real life, so it was a 50-50. The fifth free, prohibited contact. It turned out to be a little push in the stomach from Laird on the player that I can't remember, and you would think that the guy just got gut shot.
On that one.
Go on.
Prohibited contact is an actual thing.
Yep.
It's actually listed in the rule book under permitted contact. So the opposite of permitted is prohibited.
Yep.
If the ball is within 5 meters, you are allowed to push open hand on the shoulder, chest area, etc. Ball was in 5 meters?
No. This was at a stoppage. The umpire had called time to throw the ball up. Laird was getting up and pushed. I forget who. It could have been Stratton, I think. In the stomach, out of the way, the commentators themselves described it as a love tap, and he got it free. All right, let me continue. The sixth free, Betts in the back. He actually pushed the guy in the front as the guy was tracking back to cover Betts. Right, seventh free, Stratton was actually there, an illegal shepherd that was there. It was actually called advantage anyway. The eighth free, Mitchell High. They were both grappling at a centre clearance, him and I think it was Sloan, actually it was. They were both grappling. Mitchell got the free. The ninth free, Sicily High, that was there. The tenth free, Gibson, in the back. He just about got an 8.5 from me for entry. It was such a beautiful dive forward, but clearly the umpire didn't see it that way. The 11th free, Sicily High. He actually drove his head into the tackle, which apparently is either play on or holding the ball, but it was called high. The 12th free, Hill holding the ball on McKay. It was very similar to the Isaac Smith one. It was in a pack. They were both grappling for the ball. McKay inexplicably got called holding the ball. The 13th free, Bruce in the back again. Another beautiful Australian Olympic diving team performance. The 14th free, Langford trip. Chaney actually tackled him, and as Chaney fell to the ground, his tackle slipped just below the line of the short, so high thigh. Langford wasn't impeded at all and actually took an eternity to get rid of the ball, which is probably why Chaney fell over, because he was possibly exhausted from executing a 10-minute tackle. Of course, it was deemed a trip. 15th free, Duera. It was pushed as he kicked the ball. It was a free after disposal. The interesting part about that was the ball came in from a Laird kick, and Laird was actually pushed in the back as he kicked. Play on, of course. The next two frees were there. Frawley holding the man. That was definitely Laird there. Lewis high. That was there. The 18th free, Lewis holding, was marginally there, but it was there. The 19th free, Sicily, it was a push in a marking contest. Now, it was on Chaney, I think, and it was merely jostling position that you see, that you've seen for 100 years in football. Now, that brought us to three-quarter time. Right, up until three-quarter time, there were 35 frees paid. Okay, so there were only 6 free kicks paid in the last quarter for a total of 41 for the match. Interestingly, 4 of those 6 were called in the last 4 minutes of the game, of the quarter, and all 4 of those went to Hawthorn. So let's go through them. Smith holding the ball on Dougie. What the hell? The 21st free, Burgoyne holding the man in the middle. I watched that 5 times. I could not see. I don't know what it was. I could not see it. There was nothing there.
I think there was there was just that general little, I've just got my arm sort of around you.
But it was called.
Yeah, that they let go normally. That they normally let go because it's just 2 midfielders. Yep, you're there, I'm here. That's all they're doing.
It was called, like, about 2 seconds after they were grappling. Like, the ball had just about been cleared, and then all of a sudden it was pulled back for Burgoyne to take his 300th game free kick. Then, of course, we had the Walker free against Gibson. Absolutely ridiculous. Disgusting. Walker did everything possible to keep his eyes on the ball and didn't actually make contact with Gibson at all. Obviously, a free kick. And the
He did look at Gibson, but he has to in that situation to make sure that's where he is. I'm not going to hit him. He did that perfectly.
The key indicator for that free, he can look at the player until he's about to contest the ball. He must have his eyes on the ball when he's contesting the ball, and he did that. He looked at Gibson to get position, and then as the ball came in, he swiveled around and took a fairly legitimate attempt at a mark. It wasn't just trying to spoil Gibson. He actually attempted the mark, which you can't do if you're looking the other way. It's, you know, obviously the umpire there hasn't got much of a grasp on the game that he's umpiring. And, of course, the last free kick. Look, I can actually live with that one. There's no question.
It was sort of there.
Yeah, there's no question that Puopolo fell forward. It's about the 4th free that I've read out that Puopolo actually did. Hawthorn players actually got frees from falling forward. But it's a legitimate tactic, and, you know, we need to be careful about that. The issue was there that no one was covering the short kick that was obviously going to come in. Now, I haven't even covered the non-mark to
Lynch. That was to Lynch.
I'm not sure who else had a hand in that. Like, I don't know.
Nobody.
I have no idea. So, to the umpires, a big fuck you, because whilst you didn't cost us the game, you certainly did everything you possibly could to kill our momentum and to turn the game the Hawthorns' way in the last, it's no coincidence that 4 free kicks out of the last 6 in the final quarter were paid to Hawthorn in the last 4 minutes of the game, and all of those free kicks were questionable, and a couple of them had been let go during the game. So thanks for nothing, Mr. Nichols and co.
What got me is you're talking about a lot of those. They seem to have absolutely no grasp on anatomy.
Look,
do we need to send them back to school to say that the chest is not a back and the upper thighs are not the lower leg?
I just don't like... I knew when I was watching the game that the umpiring was horrible. I knew I could, you know, you're firing up, you're watching the game, and, you know, my youngest son, who was sitting there in his Hawthorn Guernsey, actually left the room, and when I asked him what he was doing, he said, "Oh, you're yelling too much." And I said, "Sorry, mate, but these umpires are terrible." But the thing of it is, when I watch those free kicks in isolation, which is possibly a dangerous thing to do, but when I do watch those free kicks in isolation, it just astounds me. There's 5 free kicks that are legitimately there. Now, I'm sure they missed a few for Hawthorn. I'm sure they paid a few for us that weren't there, although I can't recall too many. And I'm sure that they missed a couple for us on top of that as well. But to pay out of, 24 free kicks, to have half a dozen that were legitimately there and the rest of them not be there, the game, if anything, was terribly over-umpired. And Nichols is a classic for wanting to impose himself on the game, and he did it. To a T. Someone made a great comment on the boards. I don't even know whether it was on ours. I think it might have been on the neutral boards, that you've got to hand it to Nichols because he gut run all night to make sure he was in the contest there to pay the free kick. You know, he always seemed to be there when Hawthorn needed a free. It was unbelievable.
What I found most interesting is the neutral commentators. Channel 7 highlighted the bad calls. And you had on Twitter so many football journalists just going there, basically saying how bad the umpiring was.
Yep.
And apparently Channel 7, I think it was, it's been reported, just had a very small snippet in their news that said the club has asked the AFL to clarify a number of the decisions.
Yep.
So I'm quite pleased that that's what the club's doing. They're not doing it in public because that's never going to work. But the fact that we've got neutral commentators and so many neutral supporters coming onto the board, or the fact that on the board, on the main board at Big Footy, you had, I think there was 3 threads all about the umpiring in the media aftermath of the game.
There was 100 pages in the game day thread.
So many people knew.
100 pages in the game day thread on the main board. Usually there's about 20. And yeah, it was a good game, but probably 75% of the posts on that whole thread were about bias umpiring.
About the umpiring.
Now, I did promise that once we talked about the umpiring, that'd be it. So any last words on the umpiring, Nikki?
No. I'm trying to be, That was just shit.
It's... Seriously, the most biased or incompetent.
Oh, 2012 prelim.
Yeah, but over the course of a whole game, pretty good. Nikki,
there was some dodgy ones through that.
Yeah, there were some isolated incidents in the prelim, but I've got to say, from start to finish, I've never seen a game umpired so badly. Anyway, let's move on.
Tell me about the first 3 quarters.
Well, as we know, it was a heartbreaking loss. The final scores for those that have been living under a rock, 17 goals, 10-1-1-2 Hawthorn to 17 goals, 7-1-0-9 to the Crows. If you have a look at the worm, the scoring worm, you'll be even more heartbroken because it was at the death, obviously, that they got back on top. It was a fantastic game of footy, Nick. It really was. I mean, it was breakneck speed at the first half. I think there was something like 20-odd goals kicked in the first half of footy. And it absolutely zapped both teams. after half time, both teams, particularly us, came out and we looked drained. We fumbled for the first 5 minutes in the third quarter. And you almost thought these guys from both teams aren't going to be able to run out of the game. They're going to be crawling to the line. It was that kind of game. It was the Sydney game up another notch again.
Which for me is pleasing that we can do that.
I honestly thought we were going to fall away in the second half. I thought that we'd run our race. I thought that for all our efforts, Hawthorn went into halftime in front. And I thought we'd spend all our petrol tickets. But despite being fatigued, and Hawthorn were fatigued as well, and despite the first 5 minutes of the third quarter being very sloppy, we did maintain our composure. By and large, we maintained our shape, and we were able to grind out a lead going into three-quarter time. So, you know, in terms of sheer resilience and effort, that third quarter by Adelaide to get themselves back into the lead and to hit three-quarter time with a couple of goal buffer, it was just a mammoth display by the club. It really was, and all the players at that point should have been really proud of their efforts.
Interestingly, so on Triple M commentary, when it got to that point of Hawthorn was, I think, still in front at that stage, but we were kind of doing bad entries into our forward line.
Yep.
And Brayshaw's made the comment of Hawthorn look dangerous when they go forward. The Crows just don't. They're taking the wrong option because they kept talking about how Walker was working so hard. He was getting in really good positions, but we weren't using him. And then as soon as they've said this, that's when we started to fire. We started to make those better decisions into the forward line. And Brayshaw's just going, I said they were crap. They're not anymore. And geez, they look good.
Yeah. There's a few things I want to touch on, but we might as well talk about the forward entries. Our forward entries were sloppy. And to be perfectly honest, they've been sloppy all year. I'm not convinced yet that Walker and JJ are working well in tandem. They seem to be lacking cohesion. Certainly Tommy Lynch had a quiet first half and worked his way into the game in the second half, and that certainly helped. It's hard to tell off the TV, obviously, what's happening off the ball. But Tex rarely presented at the contest or presented to the ball carrier as it was coming into the 50. So whether he's leading too early, whether he's leading to the wrong spots, I'm not sure. JJ didn't play deep enough, often enough. We needed him, I think, playing deeper to allow us a get-out kick.
Were we mindful, though, of if he stayed that deeper, if his player pulled up that little bit forward, that they were going to get that break?
Look, quite possibly. It's hard to know, but it's not an isolated game when it comes to the forward line. I don't think our forward line has actually looked cohesive all year. We have Eddie getting off the chain, which is a result of structure when we push up and allow room out the back for him to run onto. We have a lot of goals being scored by our second and third string or part-time forwards like Douglas and Lyons and those types, and you've got Seisman, Sloan, and Smith potting them from outside 50. But aside from one little hole that JJ has got this year, neither of our tall forwards has really hit the scoreboard that hard. And not only that, we still lack the ability to take contested marks. I mean, Tex took one right at the end, the one that hit the post from his shot. It's about the first contested mark I've seen him take this year.
He's not supposed to take those, though. He's more that lead-up forward. But he's playing more that centre-half forward role. He's not playing deep a lot of the time. That's what I've noticed. We've left JJ, Eddie, McGovern sometimes down there. So for me, watching it live, those couple of games we've had at Footy Park, I'm actually okay with what I've seen of our forward movement. I actually think there's a lot of understanding that is going on. It's just they're not quite making the right decisions. So the way I've looked at it from last year, there's definitely been a little bit of a change. But the one positive out of this, though, when you're talking about the contested marking, is McGovern.
Oh, definitely. He is something else above his head, and you know, even without the ball, I mean, his spearing tackles are fantastic, and he's a real good addition, a positive addition to our forward line. But that said, we need JJ to play like a Jared Waite, and we need Tex. If he's going to be a lead-up forward, he needs to start deep and get himself to the 50-metre line when the ball's, you know, at the point of taking the mark. He seems to be out of position. He's either leading too early, leading to the wrong spots, and when he is in a contested position, he's still rarely actually competing what I would call strongly for the ball. So I don't know. I'm not happy with it.
We tend to... Yeah, you need to see it live, because a lot of his movement is about creating space for some of the others. They've each taken their turn at being the focal point, and the others are working to make the space for them. That's what I've noticed. They did that a little bit better, I think, in the Sydney game, because we were doing a lot more lowering the eyes. A lot of the other time with our fast break, we are trying to get that bit over the back and still keep that run going to break teams, which isn't really our SNFL team seems to be working on that similar kind of scenario.
So against Sydney, we played quite deep up forward, which allowed a lot of space about 30, 35 metres out, whereas our forward line looked a lot less organised against Hawthorn and actually a lot more crowded. And the thing that bothers me more than anything else, it's forward line 101. The space between the contest and the goal should be free. It should be open. The only time a person should be in there from the Crows is when they're taking a mark. And so many times we've got guys stationary in the hole. Now, if they're stationary there, they're not going to take a mark. They're useless to anyone. They may as well clear the hell out of there. You talk about creating space. It's all about creating a effective space. You know, there's no point in creating space in a forward pocket. You want to be in that V, 45-degree angle either side, you know, straight out in front. And I just find too many times we're caught behind, we're caught out of position, we don't read the flight of the ball well in our forward entries. And more so, out of our centre clearances, we really need to work on this, because we still do hack the ball out of centre clearances. We often lack a clean disposal out of our centre clearance. And I don't know how many times it just comes straight back out because they either take a mark, or we're outnumbered at the contest and the ball's easily run away. Now, that's 4 weeks in it, well, 5 weeks in a row. Even when we were winning, we were still having that issue with our centre clearances, that the ball was coming straight back out and we would then regroup and rebound off half back. That needs to be addressed.
I'll keep an eye out again against Frio.
No, I want you to ring the club, Nikki, and tell them.
Oh, they're totally going to listen to me.
David T, come on. No, seriously, I mean, you know, we're kicking over 100 points a week, so we're doing something right.
Yeah. But incidentally on that, Out of Town Crow had a really interesting point, because the lovely squiggle, which if people haven't seen it, maxbarry.com/squiggle, which tracks of whether you're in the premiership window or not, etc. And interestingly, it's where it's got positioned where all the Premiership Cups, or where they all are and where they've been won. And there's that magic number of you have to keep your opposition to 86 points and you need to score 100. Now, we're not keeping the opposition to 86 points, but we're also not scoring 100. We're keeping the opposition to 100 and we're scoring 112, which if you do the maths, takes it back to that 86-100 mark. So people are saying, oh, we're not in the premiership window because this is the standard. But this year has been a higher scoring year. And if you take that into context, we are in the premiership window then. It's actually just us and North Melbourne.
See, I disagree with that whole premise, Nick, and I'll tell you why. It's not about the scoring differential, if you ask me. It's about containing the opposition at a manageable rate. You know, if you have a look at our two losses, at neither game, North or Hawthorn, were we able to contain Hawthorn or North Melbourne scoring opportunities. The reason why we were in the contest is because we were basically using the ball efficiently when we went forward, and we were scoring at a higher rate.
I disagree.
We certainly were.
There were times when we couldn't contain them, yes, but there were longer periods of the game where we actually did.
Yeah, but Nick, you've got to have a look at disposals per score. And in both those games, particularly the North Melbourne game, our average disposals per score was far less than North Melbourne's. And whilst you can say, yep, that's awesome, we're using the ball efficiently, we still don't have the ball in our hands often enough.
Yeah, but this is why I don't like relying on stats like that, because, they had more possessions and they got things and they scored goals. Yes. How did they get those more possessions? Were they kicking it around in the back half a lot? Back and forth. Because there was that period in the Sydney game where we just held them up for so long. Yes, they were keeping possession, and eventually we then turned it over and got the score and got the goals back from them, because we just kept harassing and they had no way to get through. So if you're going to go on those kind of statements about the stats and everything else, or here's the pure numbers, etc., it's always got to be in context of, and this is when it happened. That's why I don't like reliance on stats that a lot of people do. No, I never have.
And I'm not, I don't disagree with you on the whole stats thing, but I do look for statistical backup when something seems obvious to me. And, you know, the North Melbourne game in particular, the obvious thing to me was that we absorbed a lot of pressure across our half-back line. The game was played across North Melbourne's half-forward line quite substantially. And it was similar against Hawthorn. We absorb a lot of pressure, and as soon as our disposal efficiency slips, as it did in the third and last quarter in the Hawthorn game, that's where we start to struggle, because we rely on our efficiency to goal to get our high scoring numbers. I understand the Malcolm Blight rule of thumb that you win games by scoring more than the opposition, and I don't disagree. And I also think that the style of football that's being played that this year lends itself to that. But by the same token, you can't discount the fact that a team like Hawthorn will absorb scoreboard pressure and they will keep coming at you. And if you can't contain them, if you can't take the ball off them, then you're not going to be able to score. It doesn't matter how efficient you are. And that, I think, is the problem at the moment. Our leg speed across the midfield is too slow on the counter-attack. And against Hawthorn, and you'll probably see this, Nick, when you watch the game in full, our defence, for the first time this year, looked quite panicked.
Yeah. What, Laird having an absolute stinker. And this is what I find really interesting. Is Laird had a stinker. Smith was good in patches, from what I understand. Talia was Talia.
Yeah, Talia
Lever
was good.
Lever was making blues. Hardigan was good.
Yeah.
Cheney, from what I saw, and I know people had a go at him about that when he was running towards goal, that ball loose with Huopolo.
Yeah.
Poppy is a bloody good player, and he knows how to use his body so well. And people were coming up with all these other things he should have done. He should have dived. I'm going, the speed that ball was going at, I think Cheney knew if he tried to dive, he wasn't going to make it. But running towards it was going to try and get it. And he did try to get Poppy off balance and push him out, because he would actually know Poppy quite well, because he would have trained on him. But Poppy's that lovely lower center of gravity, quick, and he knows how to use his body. So while some people have been absolutely scathing on Chini and think he's useless and everything else again, like often happens, I think, you know, he did the best in terms of the situation that he could, really. It's just one of those things, that contest I looked at and went, you know, I can't really see how he could have done much better. That was just really good play from Puopolo.
Yeah. The one thing I will mention, a few people have said, oh, you know, Puopolo killed Chaney all night. Well, Leddy was on Poppy for for quite a...
And then Brown.
Good, yeah, that's right. So, look, I wasn't as horrified about Chaney's game as some. I don't think he played that particular situation terribly smart, but it's unfair, I think, to assess his whole game in isolation. I thought he did a lot of good things, yeah. And I think, you know, at the moment we don't have much of an alternative at halfback there. It's really either Chaney or VB. Ideally, that's where Kelly. Hampton slots in. I don't know whether Kelly would stand up to a game like that. You could probably put him in over the next few weeks and give him some game time. Replace Chaney with Kelly running into that open goal with Puopolo and tell me what would have been different. We need some speed.
Chaney's quicker. Yeah, Chaney is actually quicker over those first couple of metres. Where Kelly has him is in terms of his endurance.
Yeah. But we've got a lot of those players. Our back six is full of endurance athletes. Lukey Brown can go all day. Tiles, Lever, Hardigan, they can go all day. But none of them have blistering pace. And, you know, Curtly Hampton is the one. I know Hardigan's fast.
Yeah, but Hampton's quite a time away. And Brown is actually quite fast as well.
Yep.
But most people aren't concentrating on him. They're concentrating on his man who's gotten away, and all of a sudden he's just closed down on them and they haven't realised that's because he's quick.
Yep. Look, and I did say, I think it was on Thursday night with Scorpus, when we were talking about where the game would be won and lost, my biggest concern out of the whole lot was their small forwards. And, you know, I hate to pat myself on the back, but that's how it turned out. You know, we held Bruce, Cyril was in and out, but Poppy bobbed up, and that was always going to happen. One of them was always going to bob up. And just back on that earlier conversation, Nick, about absorbing pressure and you know, that whole conversation. I'm just looking at the heat maps and I love these heat maps. I reckon they're awesome.
Yeah.
Hawthorn had an equal distribution of 50% in the forward and the back half, and their red zone was very much through the middle of the ground. Our split was 37% in the forward half and 63% in the defensive half. Our red zone was very much on half back and even deep into, you know, 30 metres out from goal. Now, you cannot play a game where 60 to 70% of the time you are in a dangerous position in terms of the opposition kicking goals. That's not sustainable.
Yeah.
It's not just sustainable.
And I think the coaches are quite aware of it, but it is going to be a work in progress. And what is really interesting to me, though, to take a positive spin out of it, because I know people hate this, but that's the way I just look at things, is look at how rattled Clarkson was at the start of his presser.
Oh, look. I think it's a stretch.
So we're saying how badly our defence was, and yet we lost by 3 points.
I think it's a stretch to say he was rattled. I mean, it was a close game. They got up in the last second.
It's not just how he looked. It's what he was talking about at that time as well. It was just like that we play, and he actually said, we play the game differently. You know, that hasn't really been seen this way before, and it's very hard to try and counter. And then, what is it, in the Port game, in the post-match conference with Chris Scott, He's referencing Adelaide.
Yeah, oh, look, there's, and, you know, people used to do it with Frio when Rossi Lyon went over there and all of a sudden they're playing that defensive game and no one could get near them. You know, but they haven't won a flag either. You know, it's I'm glad we've got an attacking game plan. I'm glad we've got a game plan that relies on disposal efficiency and we can score quickly and effectively. I'm becoming increasingly concerned about our inability to hold the opposition. We seem to only have one speed, you know, aside from when fatigue kicks in. But in terms of our transition, we only have one speed, and that's it. And highlighted, Nick, and we may as well segue on to this, highlighted on the next little bit I want to talk about, which is our leadership group in the last couple of minutes of the game.
Yeah, that was interesting.
We had possession of the ball. Gunston had just kicked a point. 1:20, I think, left on the clock, or it might have been 1:12 left on the clock.
And the Smith.
The only team that loses that game from there is North Melbourne, for Christ's sakes. And we did exactly what North Melbourne did to us back when Kerridge had his bag. And we gave them the opportunity to get the ball back. Now, I didn't see one of our leadership group when that ball was in the air from Gunston should have been streaming back into defence and coordinating the defenders so that we could get a one-out, short, hit-up kick, hold possession. Every time you get a mark, you get, what is it, 8 or 10 seconds or whatever. You know, you kick it like 1:20.
Well, we
they
do
shouldn't
have
got the ball back.
We do have a member of our leadership down there in Talia.
Yep, but, you know, Talia's got to cover a player on those kickouts or provide an option. It needed a Tex Walker or a Scotty Thompson or a Rory Sloan before the kick-in was even taken, before that ball even went through the points. It needed one of those blokes to go down there, show a cool head, be aware of the situation. Surely they must have been aware of the situation. They got rotations going on all over the place. They got runners on the ground. They know how long is left. And if they didn't know how long was left, and if they weren't given any instructions from the bench, then that's a breakdown of communication between the coaching panel and the players. But to my way of thinking, we lacked a cool head in that last 1:20. Hawthorn should never have got the ball back. And
agree totally.
They don't get the ball back, we win by 3 points.
Yeah, it just needed some smart play, and we didn't do it. Yes, it still burns in my gut about that, but what I want to see is how we respond to that. I'm not going to hang anyone until I can see what the response is to it. And the other point is about when you talk about a defense and we, you know, we can't get away with giving away so much. It's very interesting, whilst everybody has been talking it, us up in the media, when they talk to our players and coaching staff, the first words out of either the players or the coaching staff's mouth is, no, we've still got to work on our defense. It's a work in progress. We're aware that there are these issues. So there is a message that is very much coming out that's very concerted, that we're aware that this is an issue and we haven't quite been able to fix it yet.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned Clarko and his presser talking about they play a unique game style and all the rest of it. And I refer back to those heat maps again. It shows you how Hawthorn play the game. They play the game closed down very much in the middle of the ground. You know, that's where they set up their forward entries. Now, our forward entries are either transition, run and gun, or they're a spray kick. Very rarely do you see us set up a forward entry like Hawthorn do through the middle of the ground. We're either contesting the ball at half back and running away, or we're stoppage, 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 and then, you know, a kick from 50 or, you know, something else. But very rarely do we have that reset after we've got the ball and we've transitioned to the middle. You'll see Hawthorn often actually stop and reposition and get themselves set up for a forward 50 entry. Whereas ours is particularly haphazard. Anyway, what else did I want to talk about?
Should we move on to a positive?
Well, we will in a sec because I know what you want to talk about. But I just want to go through some players just quickly. I thought Scotty Thompson, again, was a beast. 33 disposals, 7 tackles.
Sloane.
Sloaney was probably our best player, I would imagine. 26 kicks, 26 disposals, 7 tackles. Look, I think Tommy Lynch came good in the second half and had a really good game. I thought Rory Atkins, again, handled the pressure quite well, aside from a couple of mistakes, played quite well. I thought Richard Douglas actually played well. I think he had a gain. I think he's our designated defensive midfielder. I think he had a soft tag on Mitchell for most of the night.
Yeah, and Mitch. And the interesting thing was when I, third quarter at the start of that, and they're all, oh, Mitchell's playing well, he's got 21 possessions. And I'm thinking, oh, okay. And they're saying how well he's playing and everything else. And then the next moment they say, well, Sloane's also equal to him on 21. It's like, well, then he's not playing well because normally he's at least 10 possessions better than most other midfielders. So I thought we would have had somebody sitting on him then. And I've seen, that Douglas is often the main one.
Yeah, look, I think, Sammy Mitchell's still got a heck of a lot of ball. I don't think he hurt us as much as he has at stages in the past. Look, when you look at their stats, apart from Sammy Mitchell, their next best was Paul Pioppolo on 23 posies. We had Lukey Hodge on 23. I didn't really notice him that much. Isaac Smith on 20. Jordan Lewis only had 20. Shawnee Burgon only had 17. So their midfield wasn't
dominant. I think they actually
had
Hodge on Walker.
They actually put
Tim
O'Brien down there.
He was often around Walker from what I could gather.
Yeah, I think Clarkson actually put Tim O'Brien back and they played very small up forward. And I have to say, and we talked about this, Scorpus and I and Mr. Mystery Guest on Thursday night, I think we actually messed up a little bit at selection because we were too tall down back. They were always going to play small. That's where their strength was. They don't, it's Gunston and the small blokes and that's the rest. Tim O'Brien hasn't done a heck of a lot. And Clarkson basically discarded him as a tall marking option up forward after, I think it was probably after about the first quarter. We had good numbers. We held their playmakers, all of them, except for Pioppolo. Even Cyril didn't have a huge impact on the game, although some of his deft touches are ridiculous and he doesn't need that many touches to cut you up. The only other thing I'd probably say before we move on is I noticed in the North Melbourne game, and I think, I don't know whether you were doing the rap with me that night, Nikki, but I made mention of time on ground and Scotty Thompson being up around the 90% time on ground and Matty Crouch being under 70. And I remember saying at the time that I was a bit concerned that there might have been a bit of pulling rank going on. Well, the following few games, that's evened out until Friday night. And I'm looking again. Scotty Thompson had 90% time on ground. And Matty Crouch had, I think, 70 or 71% time on ground. Now, considering there are two inside ball winners, and considering Scott Thompson's 136 years old and can't run, I hope that this isn't a pattern that's developing because Matt Crouch didn't do a heck of a lot wrong. Most of the time
on ground it's more stipulated around, it's not the players who dictate that. It is actually the bench that calls that and they're looking at the numbers in terms of they're running and what capacity they're running at and knowing what the player is actually capable of. So I wonder whether when Matt's doing the 70%, it's when he's actually running possibly a lot harder or a lot further than what he normally does, and we're mindful of that he's only had a full preseason this year for the first time. So to me, that's where the numbers should actually be considered, I think.
Look, that's quite possible. But then you've only got 67% time on ground for Jared Lyons, who's probably our other inside ball winner, apart from Sloane, obviously, who does inside and outside. It concerns me that Scotty Thompson's spending 90%. No midfielder in the comp spends that amount of time on the ground. And, you know, it really, like, he spent more time on the ground than Josh Jenkins, for goodness sakes.
It depends on what his aerobic capacity is and that they're happy. So I think we've only had four games. So you've two where it's one way and two where it's the other. So for me, yeah, I don't think you could actively say one way or the other yet. Which way is the right or the wrong way?
Well, except that both times he's been on the ground a lot or longer, we've had losses. And both times
by 10 and 3 points.
Yeah, no, I get that. But the other games have been easy wins, so there was never really any pressure. You could be right about Crouch's fitness. It just concerns me. It's a little red flag that I want to keep an eye on during the year because I thought it was just a one-off against the Kangaroos, and it surprised me that statistic bobbed up again.
I'd be interested to see where it would go.
Yeah.
So I look forward to seeing what you come up with.
Yeah. Now, probably final word for this game. We could probably rattle on for about 2 hours, but we're already at 45 minutes and people are probably sick of us already and we've got a little bit to cover yet. So final word, Nick?
Hurts. Absolutely hurts. But the fact that we didn't drop our heads, we made some bad decisions. We're still a very young team, and that there was, with, 15 seconds to go, or such, we still had the opportunity to get back in front, apart from people who shall not be named.
Yep. Look, I think, we always thought that Sydney Hawthorn double was going to tell us exactly where we were. We've come out of that 1-1 and could have very easily been 2-0 or 0-2. So what it does show me, I think, is that we're around the mark. We're on the right track. We're a very young team. Friday night we played against hardened premiership team, and we've got, 7 blokes under 50 games or something like that, 9 blokes under 50 games.
Yeah, it was so, 9 under, they had 2.
Yeah. So, from that perspective, it can really own, Southern Takeover, who I've been having a running battle with today. It really is a positive. I mean, I don't really care what anyone says about that. There's a lot of positives to be taken out of that game. Yes, we don't want to be a side that carries honourable losses. Absolutely not. But we're talking a new regime. We're talking a new group of players, a new coach, a new game plan, and a very young list at the moment. And to get to within 3 against Hawthorn on their home deck after having been smacked the last time we played them, at the same venue, I think it's a positive. So, and considering Fremantle lost today, it could be a nice, it's set up for a nice little bounce back win back home next week.
Yeah, I watched the Freo game.
You what? Death by a thousand cuts.
Oh, yeah, when I came home from the SNFL, it was like, just put the telly on. It was just like, oh, my God, these are two horrible teams. But the interesting thing was it was a close contest because they were both as crap as each other.
Oh, God, I don't know how you can put yourself but through it.
No, I like watching our opponent coming up. And it's like, and I know some people on the board are upset with others going, we should smash them. I'm sorry. If they dish us up and the injuries that they've got, we should smash them.
Yeah, we should smash them. They're playing like trash at the moment. Just looking at the other scores quickly before we talk about the SNFL briefly, Nick. We've got the D's up against Richmond by about, what is that, 3 goals, basically.
I'm actually currently watching that. There was a melee at quarter time.
Oh, lovely. I think there's been a cut. Wasn't there a melee in the Port game as well? Quarter time?
Oh, yeah, they got very upset about a player that I think had left them. or something. They kept booing him and were quite annoyed, which was
interesting. Yeah. Giants got up over the Saints. I thought St Kilda might have made more of a game of it than that, but Giants ended up comfortably.
They did up to, like, the third quarter where GWS just started to get ahead. The Saints would keep coming back, but GWS were keeping that little buffer. That was actually quite a nice game to watch. A lot of good talent on display there.
Any win in Melbourne is a good win for GWS, so they'd be happy with that. Obviously, we just mentioned before, Carlton getting over the Dockers by 4 points. That'll give them some confidence. The Dockers in disarray. And then on during the day today, we had the Swans accounting for the West Coast quite comfortably in the end.
Easily.
Yeah, Kangas getting over the Suns, which everyone probably expected with the Suns' big outs down back. Bulldogs pretty comfortably over the Lions, which pretty
good. Oh, that Kangaroos-Suns game. Cunnington's going to get weeks any better for that. And it's interesting that Brereton actually called that a dog act. Him dropping the knees into Ablett. I
have no idea what happened.
Ablett's, go forward because the ball's kind of come in low, everything else. Cunnington's running towards him. Now, normally when there's that player on the ground, you jump over that player and go after the ball.
Yeah.
He dropped both knees into the back of Ablett. It was deliberate as. I have never seen North Melbourne play for freeze as badly as they did that game. And oh my God, did they play for them badly. There was some very interesting, not quite sniping, but close to. They were, I've never seen them that dirty. And that's very un-North Melbourne-like. It was very odd watching it.
Well, it seems to me from hearing what you've said, and it doesn't surprise me actually, North Melbourne obviously see themselves as a contender. And I think at this stage of the year, they would see Gold Coast as a legitimate threat to their position in the top four. And beating them up at their home deck, I think, was probably a priority. You're talking one of the Scott boys, don't forget.
Yeah. I think that's actually was their first win up there.
Yep.
They've never been able to actually win up at Metricon.
Yep. So, obviously, they saw an opportunity to win due to personnel issues with the Suns. And I think they probably also took the opportunity to assert themselves physically over the Suns, given that they could be an opponent for them come September. So it doesn't surprise me terribly coming from a Scott brother. And, of course, you know, poor old Port. I'm actually disappointed because I said the Cats by 10 goals. They only ended up winning by 8, which was disappointing, but they did give them a head start.
Yeah, they did give them a little bit of a head start. Oh, Port are stupid. I'm sorry. There's major, major problems down there.
Well, I don't think you can say any more that there's not something going on down there internally, because I look at their numbers, and I know you don't like numbers, but when three or four of your midfielders are getting less than 20 posies for the game, something's not right.
Oh, that number, when they're like that, yeah, that's really obvious that that's where there's an issue. When Ollie Wines comes out and says, oh, yeah, the game plan hasn't changed in 3 years. Right. Yeah, there's one of your problems, for starters.
Well, I mean, even D-Mac in our first interview on Tuesday Night Live was talking about staying ahead of the curve. And it's too late. If they're still running the same game plan, do they think that people might have haven't worked out by now? But they're not playing with any heart or spirit or anything.
And there was, I'm not sure where the talk was from, but there was mentioned that there are a couple of players in Port side who are not playing to instructions. And I think one of them is probably Robbie Gray, who got dragged off last night, because I think he actually wants to win games. And I think actually realising that whatever their game plan is, it's not working, and so he's going to set up differently.
And
so he then gets dragged off.
And, you know, that's what it looks like. It looks like that they no longer buy into what Kenny's telling them.
No.
That's how they're playing. And that's a real concern for them because they've lost, you know, quality coaching personnel in Walshy and Richardson. The jury's out on their replacements, Voss and... what's his name?
Well, there's Bassett.
Bassett and who's the
other guy? Who's their forward line coach?
Forget.
I have no idea.
I mean, they ditched Tyson out. Pretty quick smart. But, yeah, they've got some issues down there, Port. And this isn't a Port show, so we'll shut up about them there. But it's always nice to see them struggling because they can eat shit and die as far as I'm concerned.
I think Pete might want to have some things to say about them on a Tuesday night. He's quite fond.
Beautiful. All right, Nick. So that'll do on the AFL.
Move on to the SNFL.
Yeah, give us some good news.
We got absolutely pantsed in the midfield. They were crap, but we won. And what I found very interesting and what pleased me was even though we were getting pantsed in there and Riley O'Brien, something was up with him today. His timing was completely off when he was jumping for ruck taps, when he was going for a punch, when he was going for his timing was just bad, so that didn't help. Was not once did our coaching staff put VB in there. I think people will be pleased to hear that. We persisted with our young ones running through there, and basically I think it was the coaching staff saying, well, this is a development team. Here's your development. Work your way through it. There was a three-goal buffer, which we kind of got out in front of Glenelg. They were playing very fast. But by the last quarter, that was not sustainable for them. And that's when we started to get the runaway. I will say that I want to give all the credit to Ogilvy and his team because we have definitely found one in Alex Keith. For a guy that has not played football in 6 years, to come in and play a game like he did there, and sometimes he was actually manned up on Alloway.
So where were they playing him? The kids got it.
At Glenelg.
No. Oh, where were they playing?
He was playing down back.
Yep.
He was down back. He's really tall as well. He's quite slim in terms of the build, but he's quick. He's got a beautiful leap like Greenwood as well, who had his best game for the club and was best on ground. And Greenwood's not afraid of some hard contact.
Mm-hmm.
You saw some of his basketball skills on display, that immediate jump and turn that he has to quickly look up the ground.
Yep.
There was little cameos from Hunter as well. He moves very nicely. His kicking action's a bit, you know, he's very straight. And then when he kicks it, he's got that really bent knee when it's connected.
Okay, yeah.
But it goes a long way, and it's pretty accurate. And he actually did some nice kicks around the ground as well, some nice little weighted ones there.
Matty Lloyd used to have a bent knee in his kicking action. He was all right.
Yeah, so it's just like, okay, that's a bit odd, but it works.
It's weird, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, our defence worked quite well. Henderson, unfortunately, has turned back into the Henderson that we know. He was squibbing contests before he got a big hit. And then once he got the hit, he was kind of a bit even worse at the squibbing. And he was doing the whole, I've got the ball, I'm going to stop and think about it and let everybody man up before I do a kick instead of kicking too fast once I've got the ball because we've actually got free players.
Yeah.
So that was a bit annoying. It was annoying me that he went back to that old, that Henderson of old. Gore did quite well as well, even though we were getting pantsed in the middle. They were targeting him quite a bit. There was some few punches and gut punches and things being thrown. Yeah. Gore does not take a step back when it's been thrown at him. In fact, he was getting back in their face and dishing a few out in return.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Dodet, besides the fact that his father was sitting in the stands with a Hawthorn cap on his head, Tom, we're going to have words about
Tom's
your dad.
Dad. Jesus.
Yeah. Bad man. Bad. And I think his sister was there or somebody else, their family, and they had a Geelong top. So that was kind of funny. But he's got really good footy IQ, some nice tackles that he did. He kind of, there was a couple of things that I was like, he should have really actually attacked the player more. And he kind of gave them a little bit of space and he corralled them, but he gave them a little bit too much space to do something.
Yeah.
So there's still some things to work on there, but seeing him live for the first time, yeah, I can see why we picked him up. He's got that footy IQ and that little hardness similar to what Lever was the first time we saw him.
Okay.
So I'm quite pleased with what's coming through in our defence.
All right, so we've got some players on the cusp. So tell me about guys like Riley Knight, Cameron Ellis-Yolman. Who else have we got back there? I'm interested to know about Harry Deere as well. I know he's not on the cusp, but I've got a bit of time for him.
Yeah, so do I. He took a couple of nice grabs or hit contests hard. Didn't quite – he missed a couple that I've seen him kick before. He's normally actually a pretty nice kick for goal. But he was doing some nice work in the forward lines and some nice pressure that we know because he's got quite a bit of speed. It just wasn't quite coming off for him at the game today. The ball was bouncing really weirdly and it was quite spongy. So yep. There were a lot of people slipping over. So Wig was always playing as a midfielder. So the people on the board who keep talking about, oh, if we've got problems in the back lines, we need to get Wig there. That's so last year. Wig is not a defender at all. We're grooming him for a midfield role. And we're actually grooming him for a midfield role in the centre. He did some nice things within there, but as we were getting pantsed, of course, that makes it a wee bit difficult to really get too much, but he was working his way through it. Ellis-Yolman started, he's been doing this, I think, in a few of the games. He starts off a bit slower and then he builds into it. There was a couple of situations he could have used that bulk and strength we know he has, and he's still not quite using it, and that's where I think is holding him back, and I'm quite disappointed about it because he's such a unique skill set. But by that last quarter, he really was starting to use it, and he did a couple of really nice things, some really hard tackles and other things as well.
Trouble is we can't have downhill skiers in the midfield, and if he's only playing well when the team's up, then that's a concern.
Yeah. He was starting to do that work hard. That's when we were getting that run on. He was part of that instigation.
Yeah.
So he was one side. Oh, him and Greg. So Greg was doing as Greg does. That
not
good
enough.
Solid contest. We know that. Well, no, that we know he's too good for SANFL.
Mm.
He just kind of does that thing. I was about to. Who else was I about Menzel. To talk about? Menzel. So really lovely hard attack at the footy. Full that body slam. Full-on tackle that he does. So as we saw with McGovern doing that lovely shoulder charge on whoever in the third, and that is a specialty of Charlie. As I think I said after the first SANFL game that Menzel just does the full body hit on them and really makes sure that they're hurt. It hurt him, unfortunately. Got a little bit dazed. He still played out the rest of the quarter. And interestingly, he was actually put in the midfield. And did quite nicely there.
Oh, that's a good sign. So his engine's improving a little?
Well, he only played the first quarter. But the fact that we were putting him in there as a rotation option was like, yep, yeah, that's what we thought the club was going to use him as, which is the forward midfielder. And it seems that, yep, yeah, that's actually the case.
So he only played one quarter for the game, did he? Or only one quarter in the midfield?
It was half and half, I reckon, forward midfield.
Okay.
And Greenwood as well was also a forward midfielder. They were doing that kind of role as well. Oh, Riley Knight. Niner did some really nice things, but he seemed to be a little bit concerned at the start to me that he was waiting for them to pick the ball up. and then do something about it.
That's he not got like better. Him.
No, that was really odd to see. But because of where we are, where I was sitting, the distance away, it was a bit hard to judge how close the ball actually was as to whether he was close enough to be going for the ball in those instances. Because when you're sitting up at the stands at Glenelg, it's not quite as easy to tell.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched the replay yet. So we'll wait and see. But that was the impression I had, was he should have been going in a little bit harder.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have to wrap it up there because we've gone 65 minutes, Nick, and I'm sure people have got better things to do. I mean, I guess my comment on the SANFL is I just hope we're not winning on the back of our fitness base. I hope we're not using that as a crutch too much. It sounds like there's been times.
Well, they've been getting little run-ons, but we get ahead, they'll do a little bit of a run-on, and then we answer. So that's what I've been pleased to see in the SANFL, that we're controlling that game a little bit, and then as it gets on, then we break them.
I mean, we really should not lose a game fielding a team that powerful.
No.
That team.
No wonder the SANFL clubs are pissed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and it's an unusual situation that we've only got two, you know, blokes on the injury list. That's not going to happen all the time. But so it's a bit unfortunate from the SANFL's point of view. But in terms of our club, you know, it's a fantastic position to be in. Nikki, we're going to have to wrap it up.
We will.
It's been lovely spending the last hour with you and venting and musing about things. I don't know whether I do. You know, I was feeling all right, and then I watched the replay to get prepared for tonight, and it just pissed me off again. I only just calmed down. So
you were telling me to watch the replay, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, not if you want to have a good Monday. But anyway, so obviously what have we got tonight? We've got Richmond and Melbourne in progress, and then we've got
the second half of that.
Collingwood and the Bombers tomorrow, which will be something that I'll happily... Yeah, well, I came close to tipping the Bombers, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. We'll see which Collingwood turns up to play. They've obviously drawn a line in the sand with Cloak, so interesting to see how they line up. But, neither of them terribly impressive.
If Melbourne get up tonight, then the only one I've got wrong is the Freo-Carlton game.
Yeah, yeah, I think I might be with you, actually. I have to check, but I'm pretty much around the mark, I think. Anyway, that's all she wrote. Nick, thanks very much for joining me tonight, giving up your time as usual. You're a wealth of knowledge, and we love having you on the show. No, seriously. And we'll be back, some of us, all of us, maybe, on Tuesday night to talk a little bit more about the game in depth and lots of other stuff. Oh, and a special guest on Tuesday night, a board member, new board member. Good night.
Yay. See ya.